Welcome to the Suburban Footy Show on PD Footy. I'm doing a special this week. I'm speaking to my business partner, Greg Cunningham. Greg was the founding partner of the Melbourne Physiotherapy Pilates and Fitness Group. Now, Greg's got a long and extensive history in the treatment of football injuries, and I thought it was opportune that we should actually ask Greg to tap into his expertise and just talk about trends with injuries and injury treatment. And Greg's just an interesting bloke in his own right with a great backstory. So it's about time we had a chat, Greg. Greg, welcome to PD Footy.
Yep, no problem, Paul. Yeah.
Now, mate, I just want to set it up with the biz. We'll set it up first with your footy background, and then we'll go into the business. I just want to give some background. What is your footy background, Greg?
Well,
where did you play?
Long history of footy. Look, I grew up in the country. Little country town called Narnagoon. And obviously I played footy there as a youngster, and then I went to boarding school at St. Pat's Ballarat.
Okay.
And I played there, which is a big footy school. And then went to uni, and for the first part of that time I played back at Narnagoon, and I had a little stint at Hawthorn Reserves. I did about three pre-seasons with them, and then finally stayed for half a dozen games, and then hurt my knee, and that was the end of that.
Right.
But then after that, I went and played at Melbourne Uni, played at University Blacks.
Okay.
Finished off my footy playing days there, and then that sort of almost immediately after that finished, I started working at the Bulldogs as a physio.
All right.
So.
So you played reserves for half a dozen reserves games for Hawthorn?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Narnagoon was in the old West Gippsland.
Yeah, that was the old. Yeah, that was in the zone. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Were you on the verge of the seniors, or when you got?
Oh no, not really. No.
No.
No. Look, it was okay, but I probably didn't commit as well as I could have. And when I first went to uni, I sort of got distracted with the university life, and so I'd done the pre-season with them when I was 18, and then sort of just wandered off.
What sort of player were you? Were you a ruckman or a rover?
So I played probably, you'd say, midfield these days. I used to play a lot in the centre.
That's an old term, centre.
Yeah, the old term. So that was most of my footy life, was playing there, a little bit up forward. In the scheme of things, it was sort of, running was my go, so I could just keep running all day, so that was my sort of strength, I suppose, when I played footy.
So you left university at 22, I imagine, 23, and then stopped
playing? No, I didn't. I had a long and checkered career at university.
Oh, right.
I did phys ed first. So when I came out of school, I did, it was at Melbourne Uni in those days. So I did phys ed. And then when I finished phys ed, I had a year off, and that was where I was going to play footy, and it didn't work out at Hawthorn. And then the year after that, I started physiotherapy.
At Lincoln Institute in those days.
Yeah. So I did 4 years of physiotherapy.
Okay.
And then I had a bursary to Warragul Hospital. So I worked at Warragul Hospital for 2 years.
Yes.
And I used to come back to Melbourne to play footy at uni.
Yep.
And then after that, came back to Melbourne, and I did 2 years post-grad physio. So, and worked part-time, which wasn't much. You could only work about 10 hours a week. So
okay, all right. So you went to the Bulldogs as the physio. Were you the lone physio at the Bulldogs?
No. There were two of us then, but we were both part time. Mm-hmm. I was the sort of main physio, and another physio was helping out.
Yep.
And so it was very different then. It was training Tuesdays and Thursdays and play Saturdays.
Okay. All right. Well,
so it was, you know, everybody had a job and all that sort of stuff. So training sort of started at 5 o'clock and you finished at about 8:30.
Okay. So who was coach? What year was that? Who was coach then?
Mick Malthouse was the first coach.
Oh.
Yeah, I worked with. Yeah.
What was Mick?
It was Mickey's. Mickey's first job.
About 84 then?
Yeah, 83 we actually started, yeah. 83, 84.
What was Mick like to work under? He was only about 30 himself, I reckon, when he started coaching.
Yeah, Mick was good. He was great. He's a very well-read person, Mick. He reads a lot of books, and he always had something interesting to say. He wasn't as grumpy back then.
Did he? Was he?
I think losing. We lost the preliminary final to
Hawthorn in 85.
Hawthorn, and that was a big turning point for Mick. I think he. That's when he sort of took on the defence, because we had a super scoring team in those days. I think Simon Beasley kicked 110, and we had three or four others who kicked, you know, 40s. I think that was the start of his all keeping to 12 goals.
That's amazing. That was an attacking team in the beginning. I mean, that Brad Hardy won
Absolutely.
A Brownlow by playing as a small forward from the back pocket, essentially, didn't he? Or playing as a
yes, he was as loose as all hell, and but he got the ball, and we were a very attacking team.
Yeah, famously loose in the last quarter of that prelim, where Lee Matthews kicked three, I think, and that might have sealed the deal for Mick on the.
Is
that about right?
And the full forward Dunstall. Dunstall was only young, and I don't know whether we rated him enough, and he played well too. So,
all right. Yeah.
So yeah, that was the start of Dunstall's career, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long were you at the Bulldogs?
13 years at the Doggies.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. And then to Melbourne, I gather.
Yes. Then I had a year off, and then I went to Melbourne for another 9 years.
Right. Well, how has working as a physio in footy changed? Well, we're talking a long time now. This is, 30 years?
Look, it was back then it was very much a part-time. I suppose we were the first. We actually put in a physio. When I said I had a physio helping me, a guy called Phil Hart started working there, and he actually worked there. We put someone in 20 hours a week working at the football club, and that was the first time anybody had ever had first club ever to have a physio actually working hours at the football club consulting, you know, all the other
innovative then.
Yeah, prior to that, Shane O'Sullivan was in charge then of the, and he was up for any sort of new ideas, and I suggested that to him that, you know, we really need to have somebody on site, you know, and a bit closer relationship with strength and conditioning and all that sort of stuff. So,
you're responsible for all these changes in football towards strength and conditioning. It all started with you.
No, definitely not. Okay. They had their own agenda, absolutely. But yeah, we just wanted to be, you know, be more involved in that side of things. And as time went by, it's got a lot more involved. But back then, it was new to do that sort of stuff. So, and we were the first club to actually have a rehab group. And it was very random prior to that, and so we set up programs over the summer and got a list of players with certain problems and set down guidelines as to how, when they can start this running and doing that and contesting and all that sort of stuff. And so that was sort of a bit revolutionary too, that we actually had a group of players that were being dealt with separate from the rest of the players.
Yes, because everyone used to do the same. All
used to do the same, and then you'd slot your injured players in when they were sort of ready. But Wheels took over.
Terry Wheeler.
He was right into detail about everything. So I remember a famous time I said to him, he used to have this stare, Wheels, he'd just look you in the eyes and, you know, you wouldn't know what to do. And he said to me, I said, this player needs a light night. And he came striding up to me and was about 2 inches away from my face, staring me in the eyes. He says, "What's light?"
And what was your answer?
I just stumbled a bit and I said, "Oh, well, look, you should do a few of these and a few of those and, you know, not kick too much and whatever." But then he brought in a rehab conditioning person. So that was really good. Okay. A guy called Paul Gaston came in, and he was from Footscray Institute. And so then we could talk to Paul and say, "Look, this guy needs a light night, needs this, this, and this." And he designed the program for them. That was the first time that happened as well. So that was pretty innovative.
I'm interested in connections. I'm interested in connections and how people get somewhere. Just to go back a bit, Shane O'Sullivan. Mm-hmm. The O'Sullivans are an old Coraline family, I think, from West Gippsland. Is that right?
They are.
So is that Bunyip. Shane?
Played Bunyip.
Bunyip.
Shane. Okay. Yeah, Bunyip. But they were sort of from Coraline, but they played at Bunyip in their early days. Yeah.
Alright,
yeah.
And he invited you down, it seems.
Yes, yeah. Well, he knew I'd done physio, and I'd also done postgrad physio, and I had a physique connection. So he wanted that sort of more of that, someone who knew a bit more about rehab and exercise part of it. So that was how I got into it, really.
So these ideas, which were quite revolutionary, were they your ideas? Like, were you studying American papers, or how did these ideas come to you?
Oh, I'm not too sure. You know, there may have been some other people doing something similar, but I think these came about from need, really. You know, there was. We had, one stage, we had about 10 players with osteitis pubis at the Doggies.
Oh, really?
Before it was ever heard of. It was just being diagnosed, you know. Mm-hmm. They went through the whole sort of hernia thing and conjoint tendon and, you know, thinking it was all this stuff. And then eventually it was worked out that it was osteitis pubis. And so we had to put in a program to try and get them, get them enough rest to recover a bit from it, and then condition them enough to be able to transition into full training. And we had them doing specific running, because you had to know exactly how much they'd done in order to be able to monitor their program. So if they were just doing random amounts of stuff, then if they flared up, you didn't know what had done what. So we had them on very specific programs, initially we did a lot of hydrotherapy and straight line running, over the summer, and it cured basically most of them. And then there were a couple we had to sort of battle on with for the next season, but so that was sort of early days with that. So,
is it unprofessional to say who had real problems, and so they really struggling to work out what was wrong with them and why it was affecting their form and they could barely run? Like, did it affect someone's career really badly in your time?
A couple of people probably couldn't say exactly, but a couple of people did affect their career long-termish, but no one was finished by osteitis pubis. But
it sounds like Wheels would be the type of coach where you're saying a player needs rest. Coaches in those days didn't like players resting much. It was just for the minute you walk on the ground, you're flat out, and that was the tone of every game you played. Sessions. That was against the tone of the times, I imagine, when you said that a player needs a rest. Is that about right?
It still is. Yeah, no. Well, I suppose they've realised a bit more now, but it's always been an ongoing battle between physio coaches and conditioning staff about how things are sort of done and what needs to be done. So the rest one, you really struggle with that a bit. But now there's a lot of cross training done and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, a lot more work in the pool or on bikes or on other machines that let you run without too much weight. And so, you know, it's become a big part of it, how to exercise and not exercise at the same time. So it's probably not quite as hard as it was before to get the rest side of things done properly.
Was Melbourne different to Footscray, or was it just a change?
Well, that was interesting. I thought Melbourne would be sort of really, a bunch of snobs over there, you know, coming from the doggies. And when I got there, it was just absolutely no difference at all.
Really?
Just another footy club. And a great bunch of blokes with Neil Denner there. And the day I rocked up, Brian Royal started. So,
ex-Footscray?
You know. Yeah. So, sort of had a buddy there already. And
so what years was that, Greg? I'm trying to think, when did Neil Danaher coach?
I started there in 1999.
Okay.
He coached, I think, from 97 to 2008.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah, about a decade. He would have been pretty earthy to work for, Neil, I imagine. Quite intense.
He was. Yeah, very earthy, very honest. Brutally honest.
Brutally honest. To his physios or
what? Yeah. Oh, yeah, with everybody, you know. No, he was good. He was great. Look, he had a big job there at Melbourne. He sort of held the place together for a long period of time.
That's probably under-recognised, I reckon, his influence in actually holding the club together, because there was administrative turmoil throughout that time, wasn't there?
There was. And he was the common denominator. He had more to do than just coach the footy team. If you look around now at Hawthorn and a few other, half the Hawthorn staff are from Melbourne, basically. Chris Fagan. David Nietzsche is there now. Adam Uze, Cameron Bruce. And then there was Mark Evans was there. He came from Melbourne to Hawthorn. Now he's at the AFL.
The AFL footy
user. Yeah.
Yep. All right.
Yeah.
Were the footy problems from your point of view any different at Melbourne? Like, I presume treatments had advanced, or perhaps injuries had injuries themselves changed by the time the 2000s got underway.
Well, I think we by 2000s we had there was still osteitis pubis around, like Colin Sylvia rocked up, you know, first. This is sort of one of the problems that's still around a bit now, is that a lot of the kids play so much football in that, especially if you're good, you play so much football in those sort of years from 15 to 18 that, you know, with local teams, under 18 teams, school teams, Victorian teams, you know, they're worn out by the time they get to the AFL, you know, and they've got all these overuse injuries that have to be corrected before you can actually get started, you know, which is one of my little pet problems with the system as it is at the moment.
I was going to say, did it frustrate? Obviously, it did. So what did you
say? Yeah, look, you know, personally, I think under-18 is too young, and I think it should be under-19 or under-20.
Is that right? Yep.
And then at least kids could get school out of their way, because there's so many kids who think they're going to be an AFL footballer, and when you look at it, only 5% of the kids in the under-18s actually make it into the AFL.
Yes.
So there's 95% of them who are there to make up the numbers so they can have games. Half of them think they're going to make AFL as well. And if they're not quite as good, they try harder and they get extra training and they do, you know, all sorts of stuff. And some of those kids may have been able to make it, but because they broke down in the process, they're given away. And then sometimes they lost to football because they were going to be an AFL player, and then, oh, I'm not an AFL player, so I'll go and do something else.
Okay, yeah. That's sort of managing expectations, I suppose. They just don't do that well enough, or is it the footy people's job to do that?
It's they're understaffed. Like, you'll have one conditioning person who's working part-time, getting paid not very much at all.
This is at a TAC Cup team, you mean?
TAC Cup team.
Yes.
Okay. You know, there may be someone helping him out a little bit who's on not getting paid because he wants the experience, and then they got start off the year with 80 players.
Mm.
Well, you can't, you know, not even an experienced, well-trained person can look after 80 players.
Mm.
You know, it's just not possible.
Okay.
And so you get all these people falling off the tracks because it's just too hard to look after them. You know, it's underfunded. And then we're talking about a competition that's supposed to be dealing with the most elite players we've got in the state.
Yes.
And they haven't got the resources to deal with them.
Okay.
You know.
Yep. What about any other developments in your time at Melbourne, like in terms of injury treatment or prevention became a big thing as the 2000s?
Well, load modification is the biggest, probably the biggest thing.
Anybody can train
people hard. That's a given.
That's true. Yep.
It's realizing when someone's overtrained and realizing what some people are more suited to train with are really important factors. And it's all about communication and coordination within the club. And that's imperative because you've got your physio wants you to do something, you've got your conditioning conditioning person wants some things to do. You've got the actual conditioning overall person who's wants them to get bigger and stronger and whatever. And then you've got the coaches who want them to do more kicking, and another person wants them to do tackling training. And when you add it all up, it's just unbelievably complicated.
Right.
So. The teams that do well are the ones who get all that organised properly, and people have respect for understanding what each person's doing and working out, all right, well, this week my thing has to take back seat because you need to do this or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest hurdle to get over. It's not, there's no magic in anything. You know, occasionally there's a breakthrough with certain exercise or certain things that make people better, but that's minor in the scheme of things when it comes down to organising the program and being able to make sure that people aren't overtrained or overcooked in a certain direction or
etc. So the teamwork off the field. So how well this off-field staff works as a team has a huge bearing on the success of a team, you're saying. Can you look at a team or a player and think that player is not that club is not very well organised off the field?
I can't just look at how they're going. You can see if a club is getting too many overuse injuries, right, then you've got to ask the question, what's going on here? Like, you've got your injuries you can't avoid,
yes,
but then there are injuries you can't prevent. So, you know, we always used to say if we can keep osteitis pubis under control, and I think that's pretty well done these days, if we can keep osteitis pubis and stress fractures out of the picture, and if anybody comes up with the magic figure for magic cure for hamstrings, you've basically got the thing covered.
Okay.
So we used to focus on those three things. You'll always have your injuries, your ankles, your knees, etc.
It's footy, yep.
But if you can focus on those three things, if you keep those, if you keep those three under control, you'll have a good year injury-wise.
Okay, I mean, you make it sound so simple, but I suppose it is in essence. So you've been out of AFL footy for a little while now, Greg. How long would it be?
8 years, yeah. 2008 was my last year.
Did you get out just, you'd had enough and you wanted to concentrate on your practice?
No, I got the flick.
Oh, I got the flick. That's more interesting. What happened there?
Well, look, it was sort of time of change at the club, and Neil had gone, and, you know, that those things happen. You know, people want to get their own people in, and, the other thing that was happening was the head physios at all the clubs were starting to be full time. Mm-hmm. I think that was a good thing. So they were looking for somebody to be full time to work just at the club, and I had my clinic to think of, and I couldn't sort of get out of that all that. I was sort of bound up in that financially. So and look, probably it was time for me to move on.
Okay. All right. Now, we haven't mentioned your clinic enough. I mean, this is what you're on. Your Melbourne Physiotherapy, Pilates and Fitness Group, opposite the Junction Oval at 201 Fitzroy Street, St Kilda. I mean, I could talk to you all day about those AFL experiences. It's fascinating. But do you treat a lot of local footballers at your clinic now? And if so, is there a certain trend that's emerged in recent years where one injury is more prevalent than it used to be?
Yeah, look, we've basically been physios for Old Melbournians, St Kevin's Old Boys. Since I finished the AFL stuff, I've been looking after St Kevin's School, the school first 18. That's been a lot of fun. So we do have local footballers coming in via those connections, and we see a lot of other local footballers as well. It's more the amateur footballers now, and I see a few of the old Doggies boys and old Melbourne boys that are lingering on with their problems.
These bodies are falling apart.
So we've still got a strong footy connection.
Is treatment changing at all? Is it? Or what are the developments you see?
Well, the thing that's probably changed the most is that the core strength, mid-body section strengthening has become very prevalent in almost all injuries. You know, I get a little bit sort of thingy about it at times because, you know, someone does their big toe, it's related to their glutes, you know. But there's a lot in it. There's a lot in it that, you know, you need to be strong around the core. And a lot of people treat hamstrings now by strengthening your glutes. But recently, and I think this has probably been borne out with Cyril Rioli, I think. Yeah. I'm only guessing here, but I think more recently they've reintroduced strengthening for hamstrings in a bigger way than they were. There was a stage where it went right away from strengthening actual muscle to strengthening glutes, getting strong in the core, which is all good stuff. It's all good stuff, but they were missing out on the strengthening of the actual hamstring. Right. And they were finding that players are playing back and their injured hamstring is still 30% weaker than their non-injured hamstring.
Because they hadn't actually worked. Was there this mania for core work where they're neglecting the actual muscle?
Yeah. So, you know, that's an accident waiting to happen. You know, if it's that weak compared with your other one, it will go again. So I'm pleased to see that's sort of, in the last couple of years, that's come back in again. And I think we are getting towards having the answers for the hamstrings, but, you know, obviously with the amateur player, it's a lot harder because they haven't got you know, sometimes they haven't got the access to facilities and haven't got the time or energy or whatever to put into rehabilitating a hamstring. So, you know, they still have issues, but, you know, great job the Hawthorn people have done with Cyril. You know, a serial offender as far as hamstrings are concerned, and look at him now, he's had a full season.
He's flown this year. I mean, this business about they remodeled his running action. Can you actually do that? I mean,
Well,
did they do that, or is this all just paper talk?
Look, that'll be involved in this also, strengthening the right muscles. But yes, you can. You can. You know, he would have had his running action videoed, and what it might show is that something, some part of his action alludes to a weakness in a specific muscle group, or a tightness in a specific muscle group, and so you can sort of then target your conditioning to do that, which will then change his running. We're talking minute amounts here, but it might be the key. It might be the difference between. Yeah. So. Look, and there's a lot of work done in that area now. The biomechanics and all that sort of stuff is huge now. So,
it's a burgeoning area. Look, I know we haven't got much time left, Greg. I just want to ask, what's been the strangest injury you've had this season? We're on the eve of the finals now, so you've had quite a few come through. What's been the most unusual you've had to treat?
Most unusual. Haven't had any really unusual ones this year.
Problematic ones, maybe?
Look, always the hamstrings are tricky, you know, and it's all about trying to manage the load when they come back and all that sort of stuff. So they're always a bit tricky. Something that's come in, you know, in more recent years with ankle injuries, and people probably are aware of this, is that injuries to the syndesmosis, which is basically the joint between your fibula, the thin bone of your ankle, and the tibia, which is the main bone of the lower leg. Injuries to that people have become more aware that they're more serious than what we used to think they were. That's where you see some people, maybe they were thinking with that Doggies fellow that recently that he might have done one of those, and obviously he's been cleared of that, but which happens when you actually, instead of rolling over on your ankle, you actually get your ankle compressed. So the foot jams up into the ankle.
You roll into it.
And the foot gets pushed sideways outwards rather than inwards. Oh. Most common ankle is to go over on the outside of your ankle.
Yes, we all did that many times.
And that's easy to fix. And you can have a bit of instability there without any problem. But if you actually go forward on your ankle and jam it up and then roll a bit as well, where you see those guys get caught in a tackle and they're pressed down and they're twisted and they do this syndesmosis injury, and that's a major problem. And so you have to have surgery sometimes, and so that's probably the new trickiest one with ankle injuries.
All right.
Over the journey,
I do a technical one. I do a live read from Terry Scanlon's Rehab Hire, where he sells hires ankle braces, which are better than ankle taping. Is that right? Is ankle taping going out and ankle braces are coming in?
I think Terry's spinning you a line there.
No, zero.
No. Look, the braces are really good for, if you say you're at an AFL club, you wouldn't go brace versus tape.
No.
But the amateur footballer who mightn't have someone there to tape up his ankles and all that sort of stuff, he might use a brace during the week and then maybe get his ankle taped on the Saturday.
Mm, okay.
You see a lot of basketballers, netballers wear the braces.
Yep.
Same thing. It's just a bit more convenient. But if you've got someone there to tape it and they can tape it properly, yep. That's the other side of the coin is there's taping and there's taping. Mm. Then most of the time the tape will be better than the brace. But it's not always easy to do. Yeah.
All right, just last question. Now, we're on the eve of the Suburban Finals. Do you now get busier? Do more players come in and see you because they're trying to get ready for grand finals and big finals?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, a few guys doing ankles that you would normally say, look, I have a couple of weeks off. They want to be better next week. And the thing is, with ankles, you can sort of almost get there with all that sort of stuff. Okay. You know.
So this is your this is your miracle time of year, isn't it? You're pulling off miracles all over the place.
That's right.
All right. Go on, Greg. You were going to say something?
I was just going to say on the other thing, when you're talking about new stuff, the development of MRI technology is enormous.
Okay.
In that, you can actually see what's wrong with things you were guessing about, or not guessing, but had a good clinical idea about before, but... that's been amazing. And so, say last year we had a hamstring just before the St. Kevin's Grand Final, and he couldn't play in the preliminary or the second semi. Mm-hmm. And he had got an MRI and he had a very slight tear.
So MRI is a scan.
Yeah. And he didn't want to have one because he said, oh, look, middle of the week, he said, oh, look, it's feeling pretty good. And I said, look, the only way you'll get by with this is if we have a scan and it gives you a good result, and then we'll actually have a crack and try and get it up. And he had a scan, and the result wasn't too bad, so sort of 50-50. So he worked really hard over the next couple of weeks, and he played in the grand final. So, that was... a great result, and you wouldn't have been able to do it if you didn't have the MRI to give you the confidence to say this might survive. Yeah.
Okay, so that's made a difference to that fellow's
prognosis.
Career.
It's made a difference, to prognosis and whether you're game enough to have a go at doing things, you can it gives you a bit more confidence to do it.
Fair enough. All right. Mm. Well, on that note, fascinating to chat to you, Greg.
Thanks, Paul.
This could go on for hours, but we've got to come. You've got work to do. It's a busy time of year.
I do have work to do.
All right, Greg Cunningham, and, chief partner. I was going to say,
a partner
at the Melbourne Physiotherapy, Pilates, and Fitness Group, opposite the Junction Oval at 201 Fitzroy Street, St Kilda. Greg is very experienced, as you can tell from our conversation. Knows what he's doing. I suggest you go in and see him if you need some miracles worked during the finals period. Perhaps I put you on the spot there too much, Greg, but I think everyone knows what I mean.
Thanks very much, Paul, for
being involved in PD Footy this year, and good luck to you and the business during the next few weeks.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, good on you.
Good on you, Greg.
Thanks for that. All right, bye.